Although the villagers had forgotten the ritual and lost the original black box, they still remembered to use stones. The pile of stones the boys had made earlier was ready. There were stones on the ground with the blowing scraps of paper that had come out of the box. Mrs. Delacroix selected a stone so large she had to pick it up with both hands. He turned to Mrs. Dunbar. "Come on," she said. "Hurry up." Shirley Jackson, in her short story, The Lottery. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. In this short story, published in The New Yorker in 1948, Shirley Jackson captured something very dark in the human psyche. Perhaps it is an instinct anchored in our psychological need for expiation, a purifying act of sacrifice to remove the taint of guilt by destroying it in the death of the other, an act that is shared by almost every human culture. At any rate, Jackson seems to have struck a chord with the story. The response to the lottery was immense. More letters were received by the magazine in response to her story than it had ever received from any other work of fiction. By and large, people wanted to know what the story meant, and some wanted to know where the lottery was held each year so they could attend. Amazing. Really? Shirley Jackson was one of three great female writers of the 40s, along with Margaret Millar and Patricia Highsmith. My guest today to talk about these three writers and their pioneering work is Karen Houston Carides. After a long and distinguished career in literary research, teaching, and library science, at the age of 60, Karen enrolled in the PhD program in English at the University of Maryland. Her dissertation became her first book, Hard-Boiled Anxiety, published in 2016. The book analyzes the Freudian underlayment of the work of Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, and Ross MacDonald. In 2017, Karen retired from her position as acquisitions librarian at the Talbot County Library in Easton, Maryland, to write her new book on Jackson, Millar, and Highsmith. Karen, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. Sort of there.
Karen, let me begin by asking you, why these writers? How did you come to choose these particular writers for your second book? And what is the link between Hard-Boiled Anxiety and this new book that you have in the works?
I came to write about them in part because Tom Nolan, who wrote the definitive biography of Ross MacDonald, offered me his stuff about Margaret Millar, because Ross MacDonald and Margaret Millar were married, And so when he wrote Ross McDonald's biography, he got a lot of stuff about Margaret Millar. And that was a great gift that he lent me all these primary source papers that he had. Then I began to think about, I realized she was not writing cozy murder mysteries. There were a bunch of American writers doing, women writers doing that at that time. And they, starting in the 1900s, and what they did was ape the British mysteries, a la Agatha Christie. And these women did very well. They wrote a lot of books. Mary Roberts Rinehart is a big name for this. She was called the American Agatha Christie, Charlotte Armstrong, others. And what they wrote are what are called cozies, which are not, which are nice little murder mysteries. And there are people writing cozies now. There are a lot of people writing cozies. And I realized that's not what Margaret Millar was doing. What she did was take the hard-boiled genre and adapt it. She basically moved it home into houses, into marriages, that kind of stuff. And so that was of interest to me.
Well, remind us of what the hard-boiled genre was.
The hard-boiled genre was set, let me think how to put this. It was set on the hard streets, on the dark streets, and it was men living in rented rooms and lonely. And it was sentimental. Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe was a paladin. He said, "I hear voices crying in the night and I go to see what happened." He was very much a rescuer of women. It was a very sentimental genre. And domestic noir got rid of the sentiment. They moved it home. And I might remind you that it's statistically the case that if you're going to get murdered, the odds are you will get murdered at home, and it'll be by somebody who knows you. So they changed that. They made it subtler. They made it more nuanced. They definitely changed these three writers, Shirley Jackson, Patricia Highsmith, and starting with Margaret Millar, to they're more cynical. It's a darker sort of thing. They contend basically the people commit murder to make their lives easier. And the banality of that makes it all worse. The other big difference is that the hard-boiled fiction is stocked with good characters and bad characters. There are good guys and bad guys in hard-boiled fiction. In domestic noir, this all gets slippery, where stuff is a continuum from sanity to insanity, from morality to immorality, and everybody slides along this continuum. And people commit a murder and they may feel guilty, but they get over it and go on with their lives. It doesn't tear them apart. So it's a very cynical, dark worldview.
Well, let me read a paragraph that you sent me earlier that okay. I believe is a summary that you wrote for publishers of your work, and then talk to me about this paragraph a little bit, because you're hitting on it now, this hard-boiled genre. You say Millar, Jackson, and Highsmith rejected the hard-boiled genre's binary mindset. What do you mean by binary mindset?
What I mean is what I talked to before. There were good actors and bad actors in hard-boiled fiction. in domestic noir, characters are all of this, and they slip back and forth. And as I say, that makes it a queasier read, because you begin to feel like any of us could do this, that in a way, I'm the scariest person I know.
Well, you say that in this paragraph. Let me read another sentence you have in this paragraph. You say there are no moral or immoral people, only moral and immoral acts. Similarly, there are no sane or insane people, and all murderers do it for the same appalling, banal reason, to make their lives easier. Is this the way these three women wrote? I sense something a little different in the works that I've read of Shirley Jackson. But in these three, is this really the worldview that the women themselves had? And are they expressing this worldview in their novels?
Yes. I think they're working out issues they had in their fiction. Shirley Jackson, these are three very different writers. Shirley Jackson wrote books and stories like The Lottery, in which people are cut off from a broader world view. They're inside houses, they're inside little farming villages, like in The Lottery, where there are only 300 people who live there. They're inside she wrote one called The Road, The Path Through the Wall, in which it's a subdivision with high walls, like our gated communities. And people lose a broader worldview. And so things that, if you could look at it from a greater perspective, would be immoral, looks like the way their lives are. And that's a little different. That's something she did more. She had women, most of her women were sort of cowed, mousy women who didn't get out a lot and were kind of caught in small spaces. Margaret Millar, who came first, her work is the closest to the tropes of murder, of standard murder fiction. There's a detective, and incidentally, her first detective was the first amateur detective, and he was a psychiatrist. There's a detective, there's a murder, there's a plot, and she was known for her tricky plots and denouements that were, I'm not sure I ever said that word right, but anyway, the conclusion, which were surprise conclusions, but utterly fair. She was a very good technician of that kind of stuff. Surely, Patricia Highsmith was the darkest of the three, really. And as far as people being pushed by psychopaths into psychopathic acts themselves.
Well, tell us a little bit about how these women are different from each other. You've hit on that. You've hit on that a little bit. For instance, Shirley Jackson, in her the novel that I read and the stories that I've read, Shirley Jackson kind of points, as I said at the top of our program, something dark in the human psyche. And certainly with The Lottery, she caught all of us with that. I would suggest that people who really didn't know what this story meant, who were asking about The Lottery, were not very introspective, and had never run across or been able to see that dark character in their own in their own lives. So they were confused about what Shirley Jackson was writing about. How about the other two? How are they different from each other and from Shirley Jackson?
You're right about Shirley Jackson. And I suggest to everybody that you read The Lottery. It's very short. It's a quick read.
Well, read it again. Read it again. If you have not read it, read it. And if you have read it again, I would suggest.
And as you referred to before, after you read it, remember what Hal said, that the New Yorker, it kind of blew up the New Yorker. Some people, you know, canceled their subscriptions and this kind of thing. But a huge number of people said, when is it held? Can I go there and watch? So what it really did, and what all three of these women did was, what does that say about the person, the real person who wants to watch, you know? Anyway, as I said, her stuff is closed out. She also is the one of the three who really was a witch. And she really thought she was a witch. And she has haunted houses and magic. And at the same time, she has lots of sad children. She has more children in her books than the other two. And we have always lived in the castle. I think it's the best book ever about magical thinking and about a child who had magical thinking. And it's a very sad book. Highsmith pulled off a hat trick with Tom Ripley. And the first one is The Talented Mr. Ripley, but you go on to the other ones. And he really was a psychopath, and he killed various people through five novels. And as somebody said, he's a dapper sociopath, and he was. And he had a happy life. And very much Patricia Highsmith would have liked to have his life, Tom Ripley's life. And he was the character she most identified with. And her books have more, there again, it's unusual because of her own life circumstances. She never found love for the long haul. But she was the bard of romance in domestic noir, much more so than Jackson and Millar, who were married. But they were not romantic at all, and Patricia Highsmith was.
Well, she had a different sexual orientation, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
So tell us a bit about that, and Karen, if it did play out in her novels.
She did. One of the things I contend is that all three of these women are in the zeitgeist now. Talk about being closed off and from a wider perspective and stuck in a house. That's what we're all doing now. And that also Shirley Jackson, there's a new movie that came out. It came out June 7th of this year called Shirley, about her. She's got two biographies written of her, including a prize-winning one in 2016. And the hat trick she pulled off is that Tom Ripley kills people. But when you read it, you're rooting for him. You're rooting for the murderer. Her first Ripley book came out the same year as Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov came out. And both of these were, you know, evil men. And Lolita, you read it, and it's told in the first person, and it's literary. It's good literature. And you read it and you're a little queasy because it's about a pedophile who's a really good writer. I mean, because he's the one writing in the first person. But you don't like him. It's just you think he's a good writer. Tom Ripley, people rooted for him.
Well, I found it interesting, and I think I've got my characters right here. Highsmith saw herself, in a sense, as very masculine, didn't she? And that was not as accepting in the 40s and the 50s as it is today. And this prompted her to move to Europe even, didn't it?
Yes, it did. That's another thing that my book says that's new, is there's compelling evidence in her notebooks and diaries that she was transgendered. Well, she was born in 1921. So she told her mother when she was 4 or 5, there's been a mistake. I'm supposed to be a boy. And by 12, she was sure. And it was that way ever after. And she spent, when the 1950s came to America with the suburban culture and all that, she took off for Europe, and she basically lived in Europe all her adult life thereafter. And she, in Europe, she dressed as a man. She got stuff sent from Brooks Brothers, tweed jackets and white shirts and trousers and men's brown Oxford shoes. She was also physically a little androgynous. She was a little low on hormone levels, and they were forever trying to fix that, doctors were. And everyone talked about how she had very big hands, which she did from the photographs. And in Europe, particularly as she got older, a lot of people mistook her for a man.
Well,
but it was a tough go, because of course, as a man, she was attracted to heterosexual women. And she had a lively, but in the end, lonely sexual history. She had affairs with lesbians, but that wasn't really what she wanted. She wasn't interested in men, gay or straight. Who she was attracted to were heterosexual women. So interestingly, the best of her many romances was with divorced women. Somehow that worked best.
Did this play out at all in the depiction of her detective? Maybe not the detective of Ripley, I believe. Did her life situation play out at all in her depiction of Ripley?
Very much so. That's what I was saying about how they're sort of working out their own problems in their books, because Ripley was who Patricia Highsmith would have liked to be. Ripley had a wife, and it was a happy marriage. Now there wasn't, they took separate vacations, and there wasn't a lot of actual intercourse, but they loved each other. They lived on a beautiful estate. They had all sorts of money and all sorts of beautiful things. And Patricia Highsmith was an amasser of things. She liked things. So in a way, Ripley had what she would have liked. As an aside, the second book Patricia Highsmith ever wrote before all the Ripley books was called The Price of Salt. She wrote it under a pseudonym because it was a novel of lesbian love. And years later, they made a movie out of it called Carol that starred Kate Blanchett. And talk about letters to writers. After she published The Price of Salt, she got letters that she wrote an essay about, because she was proud about this. She got lots of letters from lesbian couples and gay men couples saying, thank you. You wrote a love story in a novel that ended happily, because she wrote it in the late 1940s, in which any depictions of homosexuality or ended badly with suicides and drugs and, you know, all sorts of terrible things, getting thrown into prison, all this kind of stuff. She wrote one that worked. She wrote one that had a happy ending.
Well, I guess all three of these women were really battling the culture of the 40s and the 50s as well. I know you, I read that Shirley Jackson had a domineering husband. And even though she's writing these great books, she's playing the role of a housewife, a 1940s, 1950s housewife, as you say, trapped in that environment, but capable of so much more.
Yeah, that's right. The 50s particularly were hard for these three witches. As I say, Highsmith lit out for Europe. That's how she solved that problem. Shirley Jackson and Margaret Millar wrote rollicking, supposedly true stories about their households, like Jean Kerr's Please Don't Eat the Daisies, Irma Bombeck, that kind of thing, because they made a lot of money. And they did not make money on their domestic noir, despite the fact that that's what's still in print and still, that was their real writing. They also wrote formulaic, sentimental sort of stories for women's magazines in the 1950s. And the saddest thing about those are, if you read them, you can't tell which is Millar's and which is Shirley Jackson's. In their domestic noir, they're very different writers. So they had to do some sad stuff to get through the 1950s. But these were real pieces of work as far as personalities. And they just wrote what they wanted to write, and they wrote this other stuff. So they were undetoured, you know. Margaret Millar said at one point, "I just took my place. I simply assumed I had it." And that's what she did. She just kept writing.
Would you call them feminists? Or how would you characterize their attitude?
It's hard to call them feminists because they didn't consider themselves feminists. Basically, as I say, these were preternaturally angry women, misfits from the word go, misfits in their childhoods and thereafter. They certainly lived lives that I think feminists would approve of, in that they privileged their art and worked hard at it.
Karen, when your book comes out, we will be excited to read it. What is the working title right now?
When Witches Wrote Novels, Margaret Millar, Shirley Jackson, Patricia Highsmith, and the Dark Art of Domestic Noir.
Karen, thank you very much. I've read your first book, Hard Boiled Anxiety, and it's a wonderful book, and I look forward to this one. And thanks to all of you for joining us today on Delmarva Today.